Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodie, and I am your host, and I am still trying out this Wave XLR preamp. I'm really liking it. I've adjusted some things because I think I was peaking a little too much, and it was getting a little distorted when I was talking really loud, even if I added compression. So hopefully this fixes it. Let me know what you think. I need your feedback on this, honestly, if it sounds better, if it sounds worse. Yeah, because I'm having a devil of a time trying to figure this out. Before we get to news, this isn't super important, but I have COVID. So I lasted 2 years and a couple of months in working in one of the busiest areas, or one of the hardest hit areas in Maricopa for COVID. And I got it somewhere. I don't think I got it at work. I mean, I think I got it at work, but I don't think it was from a patient. I think was from some other interaction, because we didn't really run that many calls the last time I worked. And yeah, nobody had flu-like symptoms. So I could have, but I think it was probably from just regular interactions with the public. So that's fun. It hasn't been bad. Monday and Tuesday sucked, but the rest of the time has been okay. Not wonderful. I did test negative today, so that's a positive. So I was able to watch TV with my family. I had to wear a mask, but I could actually sit out in the living room and watch TV with them. And honestly, I'm going to let you know ahead of time, I'm working at like 60%. And that's a problem, because my 100% is most people's 60%. So I'm really working at, like, I don't know, math is hard. I'm going to say 25%. Probably not the best thing to start a show off with. We have a new patron, and it's a new month, so it's time to thank our patrons. I want to thank Andrew for going to patreon.com/kilowatt and signing up to be a patron. Andrew, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I will send your rewards out to you this next week. I'm not going to do it while I still technically have COVID, because I don't think COVID would make it all the way to you, but something feels weird about that. So I will take care of that on Wednesday or Thursday of next week. But Andrew is not our only patron. We have existing patrons to thank. And you know what? I say our, because while I'm the one that runs this show, I don't do it alone. There's lots of interactions with people I have throughout the week that actually help shape that week's show. So I don't always give you a shout out, because I don't know if everybody's okay with that. Usually I get permission before I mention you on air. But I do want to thank everybody that emails me at bodie@918digital.com and gives me feedback and sends me news stories that you think would be interesting, because all of this stuff helps shape that week's show, or maybe even the next week, depending on how far along I am in planning the show. So I want to thank everybody for doing that. So back to thanking the folks who continuously back this podcast on Patreon. We're going to start off with Andrew, Friendly Sleet 66, Joseph, Jerbo, Jeffrey, Steve, Neil, Bruce, Isaiah, Anthony, Howard, Jessica Kirsch, Bruce, Elon Muskie, Rolando, Tommaso, Ryan, Karen, Chip, Chris, Sierra, Dale, Don, Cameron, Nate, Mark, James, and Larry. Larry actually gave me some money on PayPal, so we're going to thank him this month. Thank you again, Larry, for doing that. And I want to thank everybody who supports the show on Patreon. And one last thing before we start the news, you can also, there's a link in the show notes. We have merch and you can support the show that way. If you want to actually get something for your money other than this show ad free, you can sign up for the merch. We have shirts and coffee cups. There's a link, like I said, in the show notes, and hopefully I will be adding more items soon. I just haven't felt all that up to it in the last couple of days, really. All right, let's jump into the news. Peter Rawlinson, the Lucid Motor CEO, did okay for himself last year. He earned $263 million in performance-based awards, whatever that means. And in full disclosure, because I want everybody to know, I just did a Patreon plug, I want everybody to know what I make doing this show. My performance-based awards for 2021 included a bologna sandwich and a Twizzler. So, and by the way, I don't eat bologna, and I'm not that fond of Twizzlers. I'm more of a Red Vines kind of guy, or even black licorice. I do really enjoy black licorice. Anyway, Lucid had its Q1 2022 earnings call, and we're not going to talk about that on this episode. We are going to cover the Fisker earnings call. I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. In Q1 2022, Lucid produced 700 Lucid Airs, mostly Dream Editions. They delivered 360 of those vehicles, which accounted for $57.6 million in revenue. This gave Lucid a net loss of $598 million. But the net loss was actually, because of, you know, the way corporate accounting works, the net loss was actually $81.3 million because $523 million. There was a $523 million improvement in the company's common stock. I don't know what any of that stuff means. I know some of you are investors of Lucid, so I throw that in there poorly. Lucid has $5.4 billion of cash on hand, and they're going to start delivering the Lucid Air Grand Touring in June at a very surprisingly affordable price of $179,000. So I plan on purchasing two of these Grand Tourings. One I'm going to drive. The other one I'm just going to keep in storage for parts. Apple has hired Desi Ujkashevic, I hope I said that right. I'm sorry, Desi, to help launch Apple's self-driving electric car. And it should be out, according to some, sometime in 2025. And just in case you're keeping count here, Ford hired Doug Field away from Apple. Last week, I actually said during the earnings call that Ford hired Field away from Tesla. I misspoke. Field did work for Tesla for some time, but the last place that he worked before Ford was at Apple. Now, Apple has hired Desi. I'm going to try this again. Ujkashevic. So, man, so sorry. Was employed at Ford for 31 years, an entire career. According to her LinkedIn page, for the first 9 years of her time with Ford, she worked in various engineering positions like vehicle engineering, vehicle simulator and structural durability testing, vehicle test engineer, project durability engineer. She worked on projects like the Ford Escape, the Explorer, the Fiesta, the Focus, the Lincoln MKC, very nice car, and the Lincoln Aviator, also a very nice car. Her most recent position was Director of Engineering North American Programs, Unibody, and Lincoln. According to 9to5Mac, Ujkashevic has a talent for sorting out regulatory issues. And if, in fact, Apple is releasing a self-driving electric vehicle, and not just a regular electric vehicle with driver assist, she is going to have her work cut out for her, if that's what she's doing. We don't know what she's doing. Anyway, congratulations to Desi. I promise I won't butcher your last name again. I'm looking forward to seeing what her and the team at Apple will eventually put out. Subaru has a new EV. It's the Solterra all-wheel drive SUV. It's roughly the size of a Model Y, Mach-E, or Toyota BZ4X, which is the worst name, Toyota. Come on. The Solterra and the BZ4X share a lot of the same DNA. They're just different takes on the car. So to be clear, the exterior is pretty unique. In some ways, it's sleek. And in other ways, it's kind of blocky. But it does kind of have that Subaru feel to it. The BZ4X, this is ridiculous. It's definitely more sleek. Toyota has a more sleek design style, but Subaru is actually, at first I wasn't sure if I liked it or not, but it really grew on me. The interior of the vehicle is nice and roomy. It's got 126 cubic feet of total passenger / cargo space. All of the reviewers that I read thought the vehicle was actually very roomy inside. It's kind of funny. The back seat seems really roomy, right? Nice and comfortable and lots of leg room. One of the reviewers that I saw was a tall gentleman. I think he was like 6'2". He got back there and it was fine. He looked like he was nice and comfortable. But one of the reviewers wasn't even taller than the car. She was very tiny. And she got in the back and she's talking about how roomy the car is. This was on a YouTube video, how roomy the car was. And I was like, of course it is. Like, you're tiny. But anyway, when you're in the front seat, it looks like you're sitting in a fighter jet. This is not subtle at all. And at first, I wasn't a super big fan of how they set up the instrument cluster because it's kind of set back from the steering wheel a little bit. And I guess by saying set back, it's further away from the steering wheel. So at first, I was like, I don't know if I like this or not. But I think they did that so you can, you know, have this steering wheel in different positions and still be able to see that digital instrument cluster, which is really nice looking, by the way. The steering wheel has lots of controls on it, like little buttons on it to control, you know, like the volume of the radio and a bunch of other stuff. The infotainment system is a touchscreen, and it's got a bunch of tactical buttons that you can push, and everything's within arm's reach. So it's very busy when you compare it to a Tesla, which is super minimalist, right? But I spent a lot of time looking at the pictures of the interior of the vehicle because I wasn't one of the lucky ones, and I never am. Always the princess, always the belle, but never the ball. I don't know how that goes. But anyway, and somehow that seems dirty. But what I'm trying to say is the more that I looked at the pictures, I was like, oh, this makes a lot more sense. Like I did a lot of zooming in. I had a lot of time on my hands on Wednesday. I did a lot of zooming in and looking. And I think the way that they have this set up, like I said, it's like a fighter jet, but everything seems to make sense and flow. And I didn't read any reviews where people were like, this is a terrible experience. A lot of people appreciated that they had actual physical buttons that you can push and you didn't have to look at the screen. So I think that's really good. It's got heated seats, heated front and rear seats, a heated steering wheel, and the touring version offers ventilated front seats. This isn't a feature that I really want in a vehicle, especially here in Arizona. It offers Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It's built on the eSubaru global platform, and it says that Subaru is an adventure brand, so this is going to be built to excel in places where you have dirt roads, a lot of mud, snow, ice, that kind of thing. They do have a mode, and this is in their ICE vehicles as well, called X mode. And it's designed to give you a little assist when you're driving up like steep inclines, you're driving on ice, or if there's a scenario you might think of when you're kind of, you're off-roading, but you're not like rock crawling, that kind of thing. I wasn't able to find out how X mode worked in the EV version of the vehicle. They did mention it. They didn't specifically say how it was working. But in the ICE version of the vehicle, it uses the transmission and traction control to help the driver navigate those more like those trickier scenarios when you're on the road. Like I said, driving in mud and up steep hills or even down steep hills. If you're just kind of off-roading, but again, you're not like rock crawling because this car won't rock crawl. I can see somebody buying this car if they didn't live, you know, out in the sticks. I could see somebody buying this car if they lived in a suburban area and they had a relatively short commute. And I'm going to get to that in a second here. The battery is 72.8 kilowatt hours. You're looking at a range of 228 miles, And that's with the premium package. With the limited and touring package, you're looking at 222 miles. Now, I will say that that range is kind of low in, as a general rule, right? Especially when you consider with the EVs, you can't really charge up to 100%. But this is an all-wheel drive vehicle. And anytime you add that second electric motor, the range is going to come down. So just to give you an idea, the normal Ioniq 5 is like the single motor Ioniq 5 has a range of 303 miles. If you get the all-wheel drive model, it's 256 miles. So that does make a difference. And all-wheel drive, especially if you're driving in places where the roads can be a little bit hairy, that's a welcome add-on to your vehicle. The charge speed, it'll charge up to 80% in under an hour, so that's a little bit slow. But the car starts at $44,995, so that's pretty good. If you're considering a Solterra, but you're still open to looking at other vehicles, I actually have some recommendations for you. The Ioniq 5, like I said, has 303 miles. It has a little less if you get all-wheel drive. They do have on Hyundai's website, they have listed a standard range model with 220 miles. I don't know if they're selling that yet because I can't find it anywhere. With the EV6, the Kia EV6, you're looking at 310 miles, which is with all-wheel drive is about 274. The Kona EV is a really good option, 258 miles. The Kia Niro, also a very good option, 239 miles. The VW ID.4 has a range of 260 miles. And Chevy's making a new Chevy Bolt, newly designed. It looks a little sleeker, I guess. It looks, actually, it looks a lot nerdier. It looks like a car a nerd would drive, but I'm a nerd and I'm not ashamed to admit that. But the Chevy Bolt has a range of 259 miles. Or try a Polestar 2. And we're going to talk about the Polestar 2 in just a second. But I wanted to let you know, because I have a lot of integrity as a podcast host, that I did not do that story about the Subaru because a concerned mother asked me to, because she wants her daughter to buy an EV instead of killing the planet with an ICE car. I didn't do that for that reason. I did it for my own reasons. So I just want everybody to know, despite what I may have demonstrated in the past, that I have integrity and I will not participate in such shenanigans. All right, let's talk about Polestar. The single motor version of the Polestar 2, the 2023 Polestar 2, not the Polestar 1, now starts at $48,400, which is slightly higher than the 2022 model, but it comes with some additional goodies. So for those that extra, I think it's $2,200, you're going to get new exterior colors like Space Metallic Black or Jupiter Gold Gray with Red Flake. You're going to get new wheel designs. You get the standard 19-inch or an optional 20-inch. I'm sure you pay for that optional 20-inch. You get zinc gray color vented Napa leather upholstery available with light ash deco trim, which is very nice. Removable sunshade for the panoramic glass roof. Actually, that's nice here in Arizona. Improved optimal temperature range for heat pump. Also something that's a good thing, especially for range. Advanced cabin filter and upgraded interior particulate matter sensors with a new in-car app. So that $2,200 gets you all of that cool stuff. In addition to all of these cool features, the range will remain the same as the 2022 version. And I went to the website to verify that this is true. And it's really weird how they talk about the range, because they claim up to 270 miles. Which is a weird way to talk about their range, because, I mean, we all kind of know that range can fluctuate depending on a wide variety of factors, but most auto manufacturers say this is the range, and then they have a little, like, eye next to the range where you click on it, and it says, you know, there are a lot of factors that affect range. So, anyway, thought that was weird. Hyundai and Rimac, if you don't know, makes a beautiful EV supercar. Well, Hyundai and Rimac, a couple of years ago, I think in 2019, they started a partnership to work on a couple of different cars. Actually, it's two cars to be more specific. And when they formed this partnership, Hyundai Kia purchased a 12% stake in Rimac, which is worth about $90 million. It's that 12% stake. Porsche also owns a stake in Rimac, and at the time it was only a 10% stake, but recently Porsche upped its stake, I'm saying stake a lot, to 24% last year. According to Automotive News, Hyundai isn't comfortable with Porsche owning that much of the company, so they are pulling out. It is unknown what will happen to the projects that Hyundai and Rimac were partnered on, or what Hyundai is going to do with the 12% of the company. Are they going to sell it? Are they going to keep it? They're going to donate it to charity? Who knows? I'm going to guess they're going to sell it, but who knows if they're going to sell it right this second, or if they're just going to hold on to it until it's worth more money. You know, $90 million isn't a lot to Hyundai. Rivian is getting $1.5 billion in public incentives for their new plant in Georgia. This is the biggest incentive package offered to a company, any company, in the Peach State. And it's quite the incentive package when you consider that Rivian and other EV makers can't even sell their cars direct to customers in Georgia. If you are in Georgia and you want a vehicle from Rivian, and you work in the factory, you have to order it from out of state, go pick it up out of state, and you might even have to have your service done out of state, which is a lot of fun. But anyway, there's a House Bill 460, which looks like it was killed, but at some point might be revived, that would allow Rivian and other EV makers to direct sell, or automakers just in general, to do direct sales in Georgia. But at the moment, it's dead. One of the great things about the Ford F-150 Lightning is the ability to power your home in the event of emergency or some other outage, power outage. And it should go without saying that a standard charger isn't going to accomplish this. Like, you're not going to go on Amazon and buy a charger, set it up, plug it into your Ford, and it's not going to power your house. You actually need some fairly expensive equipment, it turns out. Ford has announced the Home Integration System, which will support bidirectional charging. Ford is calling this Ford Intelligent Backup Power. Now, I'm going to be honest. I found Ford's naming conventions when it came to this subject very confusing. So I'm just letting you know that I may say some things that might sound confusing. But they have the Home Integration System. The overall system, I believe, is called the Ford Intelligent Backup Power. And then they have a charger, which is called the Ford Charge Station Pro. And that Ford Charge Station Pro does offer bidirectional charging, but it won't work unless you have the home integration system. So what is this going to set you back? Well, if you just want the Ford Charge Station Pro charger without any option for bidirectional charging, then you will pay $1,310 plus installation. Or if you bought one of the Ford F-150 Lightnings that comes with the extended battery, then that comes free with your vehicle, according to Electrek. And I actually went to Ford's website and I did see that that was also the case. Now, Ford's home integration system will cost you $3,895. So that's a grand total of $5,205 just in hardware. That does not include installation costs, which will change depending on the situation, where you live. But I bet it's not cheap. I bet you this is fairly expensive, if not $2,000, if not more dollars to install. And by the way, if you are one of those lucky people who has a F-150 Lightning reservation and you're going to be getting it soon, Sunrun is an authorized dealer from Ford to install these things. So if you're thinking about doing this, head to Sunrun. So my question to you is, given how much money this costs, you know, the $5,205 plus installation, is the functionality of having the ability to power your house in the event of an emergency or power outage, is that important to you? And I guess an emergency that you would actually be using this would be a power outage, but you know what I mean. For me, I'm conflicted because here's how it is. Like, I live in Arizona. The power hardly ever goes off here. But if it went off in the, like in the middle of July when it's 120 degrees for more than a few hours, I could easily convince myself that this is something that I need for at least the next 2 to 3 weeks. After that, that argument gets weaker and weaker. But not having air conditioning in Arizona sucks. It's not fun. I've done it. It's not a good time. But that happens so rare. And, you know, only happens like at most once every couple of years where I live anyway. So, yeah, interesting. I mean, I'm curious to, I know everybody has a different situation, so I'm curious what you guys think. Bodie, B-O-D-I-E at 918 Digital. And let's talk about that. The White House has announced a $3.1 billion plan to fund companies that would do any of the following: make new batteries or recycle current lithium-ion batteries. And to be more specific, this money is for creating new battery plants, recycling plants, retrofitting or expanding current plants. This has nothing to do with the infrastructure bill. This comes from an executive order from the president that invokes the Defense Production Act to boost production of lithium and other materials needed to build EVs. The grants will be given to companies to help bolster the U.S. supply chain, and likely their biggest goal is to lessen our dependence on China and other countries. It looks like up to 30 companies will be able to apply for a grant, but they will need to contribute equal funds. So the minimum investment is $50 million. And so if the government's going to give you $50 million, you also have to invest $50 million of your own dollars to get those funds. Not to be outdone, the United States Department of Energy announced a $45 million grant to help bolster domestic EV battery production. I use bolster a lot. I use stake and bolster in this episode a lot. A tweet from the U.S. Department of Energy had this to say: "We want to make electric vehicles more accessible for all Americans. So we're announcing a new program of grants." I added the "of grants" part because they had it written weird. To develop more efficient EV batteries that will charge faster and last longer in colder temperatures and on the road. So I think this is really good. The money comes from the EVs for All program. And if you want to know how that acronym is broken down, is Electric Vehicles for American Low Carbon Living Program. The goal is to aid in the following: faster charging, increased efficiency, especially in cold weather, and improved resilience, which is basically longer batteries, longer range batteries, curb that range anxiety. That's the goal there. All right, that is our EV news. Let's jump into our Tesla news. Tesla's 2022 annual shareholders meeting will be held August 4th in Austin, Texas. We will cover it, but not until August 4th. Now that Tesla has expanded the FSD beta program to Canada, they are also raising the cost of full self-driving by $2,200 Canadian dollars. So it's now right around $12,000 Canadian dollars, which sucks. It's been about a month and a half since I've been in a car with full self-driving beta. And while I'm not sure, you know, what improvements have been made in the beta, I'm sure there's been some improvements and some regressions. Charging $12,000, I know I get on this a lot, but charging $12,000 for a product that may or may not be feature complete by the time you're done owning the car is bad form. It feels like price gouging. It feels like cheating. It feels like almost like stealing. I am really disappointed that Tesla does this. Like, I think $5,000 is a little rich, but I think anything over $5,000 for a product that does not work the way that it is, that it was advertised to work, is ridiculous. And I know that Elon and Tesla are like, this is going to be the future and you're going to be able to rent out your car and you're going to be able to make money. Charge people who are renting their cars more money for full self-driving. People who just want to drive their vehicles and be safer, like, give them that at a reasonable price, not a quarter of the price of a car or one of their cars. Like, that's a ridiculous amount of money. Like, Elon's on Twitter and he has the gall to complain about the 30% that Apple charges to developers which I do think is a little high, but he has the gall to complain about that, but he has no problem charging you $12,000 for a product that is not feature complete and may not be feature complete during the time that you own your car. That's ridiculous. And it may not be feature complete if you have the Hardware 3. It may not be, you may not be able to get that full self-driving unless you have Hardware 4. And, you know, Hardware 4 is coming out with the Cybertruck whenever that comes out, hopefully next year. And maybe they won't have it feature complete with Hardware 4, and maybe it'll be Hardware 5. Like, you just keep kicking this can down the road, Elon, and then eventually people are going to stop buying this. Like, my hope is that all of these other companies that are working on this technology, especially, like, you know, we did an Apple story earlier. My hope is that Apple actually solves full self-driving better than Tesla and keeps the price at like $5,000, because Apple's going to charge more than most places are, right? But just keeps that price at like $5,000. And that's going to force Tesla, hopefully, to adjust the way that they're thinking about full self-driving. Because right now, I just think they are very, very proud of it. And they have no reason to be. You know, that parent that has a child that can do no wrong, and no matter what bad things that child does, it's still perfect. That's kind of how I feel like Tesla looks at full self-driving. Like, it's in beta. Stop charge. Like, that's just gouging. I don't know. I'm going to be done with it. Makes me mad. According to Electrek, Tesla is canceling employee bonuses tied to delivery quotas. And I can't remember when Elon said this, but it was not that long ago. Elon said that Tesla was going to change the way it handled end of the quarter deliveries. Because if you remember right, at the end of the quarter, Tesla had this mad push to deliver as many vehicles as they possibly could, because they wanted Wall Street. They wanted that affection from Wall Street. And in the end, it was really stressful to the team. There was only a small group of people that really cared if they got their car on at the day before the end of the quarter or the day after the new quarter began. Like, I'm sure everybody wants their car as soon as possible, but it was like, it was a lot of work for the Tesla team to get these vehicles out to customers. And on top of that, it probably cost Tesla a pretty penny, because they're paying a bunch of people overtime to do this. But to make this more appealing to the team, there was end of the quarter bonuses and delivery quotas and things like that. So people, and I've talked to people at the Tesla stores here in Arizona, that they were doing pretty good with these delivery bonuses. Like, none of the employees told me what they were getting, but they told me places that they had worked previously to working with Tesla and how much better the bonuses at Tesla were. And some of these places, like the Verizon store, Verizon gives managers and things like that really good incentives and bonuses and stuff like that. And Tesla was way outperforming what the Verizon store was in terms of bonuses. Anyway, these bonuses are going away. Tesla is going to raise the base salary of employees that work in the delivery and sales departments, but it's unlikely that the bump in pay will make up for the bonuses that are going away. The employees are probably going to lose money in this case, which I hope they don't, but I don't have high hopes that they won't. Giga Shanghai is currently going through an expansion, and I got this letter, or this article, excuse me, from Clean Technica's Jonna Kreider. She's great. You should read her stuff. Somehow a screenshot was taken of the Secretary General of the NCPA of China, the National Passenger Car Market Information Association in China. The screenshot indicated that Giga Shanghai could produce 90,000 vehicles per month, which is a pretty good number. We don't know how accurate this is. If it's true, this is really good news for Tesla. And hopefully they can bring what they learned to Fremont, Texas, and Berlin. That'd be great. All right, this is our final story this week before we get to the Fisker earnings call. An environmental group, the Green League, is asking for Giga Berlin's operating license to be revoked due to a paint leak. So according to a report from the State Environmental Agency and Lower Oder Spree Water Authority in Germany, Tesla had 15,000 liters, about 4,000 gallons, of paint mixture leak. Now, the article didn't say this, but I'm assuming that when the paint leaked, that leak went into a containment area, which is typical when you store large amounts of hazardous materials. You're required to have a containment area, at least in the countries that I live in, But at some point, a disposal company was pumping that paint out, which also leads me to believe that there is a containment area. At some point, 2 to 3 liters ran onto an access road and were bound. I don't know what that "were bound" means, or I know what "were bound" means separately, but I don't know what it means in this context. But basically, 2 to 3 liters ran out onto an access road. The report also states that the paint did not get deep enough to get into the groundwater or sewage system. Let's see. According to the report, the leaked liquid was slightly hazardous to waters. So 2 to 3 liters is not a lot. And in some parts of the world, that's not even reportable. You don't even have to tell anybody that you just clean it up. It's not something you need to let anybody know about, depending on what the material that leaked was. So does the Green League want Tesla to shut down forever? No. And what they want is actually quite reasonable. They want the license to be revoked until Tesla can pave some unpaved areas and roads around the plant to lessen the chances of hazardous materials should they leak again, anything leak, actually not just the paint mixtures. It doesn't get into the aquifer, which I think is reasonable. It makes a lot of good sense. I would go even further to say that Tesla should have some redundant areas of containment set up around the property to make sure that it doesn't reach the water. And I don't know that they do or they don't, but we definitely don't want to keep that in the waterway. I am not currently on a hazmat team, but I am hazmat tech certified, and I have been on hazmat teams in the past. And I've been on plenty of leaks and spills. Some of them were contained properly, and it was like no harm, no foul. We fixed the leak or the spill or whatever happened, and then we went about our merry day, and the owner of the property has to deal with it. I've also been to calls where the outcome wasn't so positive, and because of that, it had a pretty significant impact on the environment. Now, where I grew up in Alaska, there's a couple of Superfund sites, and I've lived some places where there have been Superfund sites, and basically you can't do anything on those sites for like 100 years or something like that. It's like ridiculous. Or there's a lot of mitigation that needs to be done before you can actually use those sites. So, it's probably best to be too careful than, actually ruin the environment that you're working in.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's start our Fisker earnings call portion of the show. Before we get into the earnings call, Fisker announced an all-new electric vehicle, and it's a sports car. Heinrich Fisker made the announcement on Instagram because he left Twitter when it became clear that Elon was going to buy it. We don't have a lot of info on the vehicle itself. It's going to be called, at least for the moment, the Ronin. It'll have a range of over 550 miles. And it'll feature a structural battery pack. The Ronin is being designed in England by a former Aston Martin alum, Dave King. We should see a prototype in 2023. Production will begin in 2024, and deliveries will begin sometime in 2025. Having said all that, let's go ahead and listen to Heinrich Fisker's opening remarks.
Thank you, everybody, for joining the call today. Let me just start by sharing how super excited I am after having driven a Fisker Ocean prototype in Europe at Magna's plant. It was just amazing. I've been part of a lot of product launches in my career, but I have to say, driving a vehicle that are a little more than 6 months away from startup production without any squeaks and rattles is just fantastic, and it's really hats off to our engineering team and Magna's engineering team and manufacturing team. It's just outstanding. So I'm just so excited about that. I, of course, reviewed a lot of details of the vehicle. I'm flying back over in middle of May, actually to the Bridgestone's Proving Grounds to do more fine tuning and testing, also together with our race car driver, Abby Eaton, that's we have hired to help us set up suspension in the vehicle so it really handles like a sports car but have the utility of an SUV, and we will make sure that it still drives comfortably. This was just so cool. Now, then we also went on to on a little tour in Europe where we had shown the Fisker Ocean, and I'll get back to it in a second. I do want to mention that our reservation actually has accelerated even further. We have well over 45,000 reservations, which actually represents about a $2.5 billion potential revenue. And with this continued growth, we should hit 65,000 to 75,000 reservations by the end of the year, which obviously means we are way above what we would be able to produce next year. So what we also are discussing right now with Magna. In fact, we have, I think, really decided with Magna that we want to increase the production at Magna in 2024. Originally, we had planned 50,000 units, but I think as we see with this incredible demand that are continuing, and I expect to continue as people get in and actually try the Ocean and we get the vehicle in the street, we are planning now to triple the production in 2024. To as close as 150,000 units as we can. Of course, that also means getting our suppliers with us, which that's the next step, going out to all our suppliers. And just staying on that for a moment, we have a task force that are working with all our suppliers between Magna and Fisker, and I think Gita will talk a little bit about that later. And so far, we have done extremely well working together on that, because we're still on target for production, start of production on 17th of November this year, and we will start deliveries immediately thereafter. So it will be deliveries this year as well. We have a very strong balance sheet. We got over $1 billion in cash, and the business continues to scale. We now well over 450 people. That represent about a 40% growth year to date, and we continue to grow throughout the rest of the year. We are really in a hyper growth mode. And I mentioned earlier our marketing efforts. Just to kind of give an example, you know, we were in Denmark, where we had a prototype in one luxury mall for, I think, about 10 days. And at this point, just in Denmark, we have over 1,650 reservations. That represents about 6.5% of the Danish EV market. That's phenomenal for a vehicle which has only been shown there once, and where a lot of the reservations were taken before it was shown. And as it was shown, we saw an incredible acceleration in the orders. So I can really see that once we start getting this vehicle out and people get to see it and then later try it, I have no doubt that we're going to be able to easily fulfill or really deliver every vehicle we can produce. Also lately, recently, we had, actually it was last Friday, we had a executive strategy day, and we actually, the leadership team reinforced our clear future product and technology strategy roadmap. I'll let Burkhard talk a little bit about the technology, but I just want to mention a little bit about our strategy with our four vehicles, because I know once in a while people are saying, well, why don't you just make one vehicle? And then when you're done with that and you produce and start selling it, then you talk about a second vehicle. Well, if that would be how we did it, we wouldn't have our second vehicle out until 2026. And obviously, that's not the way we want to go. And that's also why we chose our unique strategy. And I actually would call it our hyper product development strategy. And what I mean by that is that in any other EV startup, you are dealing with two enormous tasks. One is building factory and learn how to manufacturing a car, and the other is to developing a car and technology. In our case, we are only looking at developing car and technology because we've got an amazing manufacturing partner. So we don't have to worry about that. We know we're going to get high quality cars from the get-go. So what we have done is we have set up an organization within Fisker, which is geared towards making multiple vehicles in tandem, developing multiple vehicles in tandem. And I call that the hyper product development mode. What we have done is we have set up a UK entity, which is already up and running, and are run by our senior vice president of engineering over there, which is running one of our new programs, the Ronin, and I'll get back to that. And then, of course, we have our development teams here in Los Angeles, which are running our high-volume vehicle programs, which is the Ocean and the Pear. And I was never a believer in giant teams where 1,000 people try to get, you know, into developing one vehicle from the start. In my view, small teams, agile, moving extremely fast, moving people around in a unique matrix organization, that's the way we have set it up. And Burkhard and I have spent a long time discussing how we maximize this effort and this advantage of being agile. And we have now, I think, really shown that our development, our unique development process of developing a vehicle in less than 2.5 years actually worked. And of course, we already started the Pear last year, and we started also the Ronin last year. And those two programs will see the benefit from all these lessons learned. And we're already seeing these benefits. And that's something which I really think sets Fisker apart, because I believe before 2025, that's really our chance to take a huge market share. And if we can bring four vehicles to market in segments where there's not a lot of vehicles already, and where we have at least four unique features, either we have the longest range in our segment, like, for example, the Fisker Ocean with 350-mile range, this is the longest of any SUV or a crossover in our price segment, or, for example, the California mode that's in the Ocean. So four features that are either unique or segment-leading, that needs to be part of every vehicle we do. So let me just finalize here. The Ocean update, we have completed the first prototype build phase, and we have already done a ton of testing. We have done window testing in Sweden, which Burkhard personally traveled to, and we are doing now a whole bunch of different tests as well, whether it's chassis systems or the ESC, the suspension, the brake tuning. All this has already been done and is now followed by a round of next vehicle dynamic testing in Italy, which Burkhard and myself will fly over to as well. A little bit to the Pear update. This program is in full speed. We are now increasing the efforts on PEAR as some of the engineers are starting to gear down and out of the OCEAN program or have simply just less to do in the OCEAN program, so we can now divert a lot of these extremely talented people over to the PEAR program. And that's, again, the advantage. By having these fast developing processes, we can actually use people right when they get off the OCEAN program. They don't have to sit and wait to start another program. We have already started the second and the third program. So we are taking fully advantage of our team at Fisker. Something new about the PEAR, I just want to mention, at least some news. We have decided in our strategy session now to go forth with having three derivatives initially on the PEAR platform. It's really a result of that we see it's such an efficient platform. It will be fairly low cost, or I would say really low cost to manufacture. We are aimed to take a lot of parts complexity out of the platform, concentrate on spending money on high technology and really interesting consumer features that's never been seen before. There will be two other variations of the PEAR coming out, of course, after we launch the PEAR in 2024, and they will come later in 2025 and 2026. But ultimately, these three derivatives, we believe, it'll enable us to sell 1 million PEARs a year sometime in 2027, so fairly soon. And we think this is going to be a really important story, the growth story of Fisker in the future globally. Third vehicle update. You might have seen that I announced a Project Ronin this morning, and this vehicle has a unique space within Fisker in the sense of it's really the technology testing platform to a certain extent. And what I mean by that is that as we develop PEAR, we need to be able to develop some extreme technology, make decisions whether we bring it into PEAR or not. It could either be because it's not ready or because it's too expensive. But we already see some interesting synergies between, even though PEAR is a very low-cost vehicle and the Ronin's very expensive, once it comes to technology, it's really more about the value of that technology and what it enables you to do and if it's ahead of everything else. So, for example, we're developing, I think, a world-leading wiring harness that is super simple, super light, and very low cost, but it's really effective. And Bukhar can elaborate on some of these technologies. But the Ronin is really there to allow us to explore some of those ideas early. It will be a vehicle that is super unique. It has really never been seen a segment before. And I know we showed a picture, and it wasn't really clear to see what it actually is. And some people said it was just a four-door sedan, and it's not. And maybe that becomes a little clearer in the next couple of days. I'll elaborate a little bit on that, what's so unique about it. Also, I've set the engineers a very tough task of reaching 600 miles. We already know now that it for sure will have over 550-mile range, but the target would be closer to 600 miles. And if we can achieve that, that would be equivalent in Europe, testing driver to our 1,000 kilometers. So the idea, of course, with this vehicle is that it truly will replace the luxury gasoline Grand Tourers out there. And I think ultimately the way we have positioned the Ronin, it will be able to both compete against all the luxury electric sedans, all the luxury gasoline sedans, and all the luxury sort of sports coupes and all the luxury convertibles in the market segment from $100,000 and up. And when you look at that entire segment, it could be an interesting segment if you can take an unnatural large part of it. And I think we'll be able to do that with the Ronin when we show a little bit more about what it offers. Again, that vehicle is developed or run out of England, our Magic Works. So it really is not about focusing, or we don't have the OCEAN team suddenly focused on this vehicle particularly. It's done in a different development group. So we are, of course, it's matrixed into here for electrical architecture, powertrain, et cetera, but it really is a product that's run separately.
Okay. I know that was very long, and I believe it or not, I actually cut some stuff out of that. One of the things that I really like about covering Fisker's earnings calls is because I feel like you get a lot of good information. Now, I don't think that Heinrich Fisker said anything groundbreaking in those opening remarks, but we're going to hear a little bit more about, not so much about the vehicles. We're not going to get any scoops on those. If you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, that's not going to be new information. But what we do get is we get a glimpse into what Fisker and the team is thinking. And I think that's really important, especially when we're prognosticating about what these companies are doing, in between quarters. So it's good to have a call back here. Now, Magna, if you don't know, Magna is a third-party company that will build a card for you if you would like them to, or a vehicle. It doesn't have to be just a car. They're pretty big. I think Neo uses Magna. I could be wrong, but I think they do as well. The Fisker Ocean is on track for November 17th still, which I think is great news. They really hit this hard throughout the earnings call that they're going to hit that target, and hopefully they do. 45,000 reservations. I cut this part out, but he mentioned that their goal was to have 50,000 reservations. And they've seen interest in the vehicle go up because of the high gas prices, basically. And they've done all of this and gotten all of these reservations with very little marketing money, which is really impressive when you consider that I don't know that I can go to any of my friends, even my friends that are technical, with the exception of, I guess, people who listen to the show. But I don't know if I can go to any of my regular friends. I don't know how to say this anymore because now I feel like I'm being insulting. Most of my friends are not going to know what a Fisker Ocean is. They're not going to know what a pair is. But still, they have 45,000 reservations. So that's pretty good, which, you know, if all of those converted equals billions of dollars. He did mention, and I can't remember if this was, I left this in or not, but he did mention that the reservation holders have indicated that they want of the three trims that they offer, and there's actually four, but I'll get into that in a second. Of the three trims that they offer, reservation holders are actually indicating that they want to purchase the higher end trims. So just kind of a quick breakdown here. You have the Fisker Ocean Sport, which is all-wheel drive with an estimated 350 miles. We will see if they hit that number. But we talked about this earlier when we talked about Subaru. When you have an all-wheel drive vehicle, that typically will cut your miles, your range down. Fisker has something that on their website, and let's see, I don't know if I can pull it up here. They have an interesting thing. It looks like you can use it in all-wheel drive, or you can use it in single motor mode. And if that's the case, I can see where maybe they're able to hit that range. And I'm not going to pull it up here because it's distracting. But maybe they can actually hit that 350 miles or somewhere close to it if it's in single motor mode. But if it goes into dual motor mode, I would imagine that range is going to drop. Still maybe over 300 miles, though, so that's pretty impressive. But the price on the Fisker Ocean Sport is $37,500. And I should say that the range that they're giving is estimated. It hasn't actually been validated yet. And then you have the Fisker Ocean Ultra. All of these vehicles have the same range. All of these vehicles have all-wheel drive, so I should also say that. I don't know if I mentioned that either. But the Ultra is $49,990. The Ocean Extreme is $68,999. Now we're talking. That is a pretty big jump, a $19,000 jump between the Ultra and the Ocean. So it's a $12,000 jump between the Sport and the Ultra, and $19,000 between the Ultra and Extreme. Now, the Fisker Ocean One, which is going to be the launch vehicle, they're only making 5,000 of these vehicles, and it'll have some special little features here and there. That is $68,999 as well. But once they build those 5,000 vehicles, they're not going to build any more. And Fisker did mention later in the call, and I don't know if this got left in or not, but they mentioned that at least for the next couple of months, they are not going to be increasing prices of their vehicles. And The reason why is, one, they're using lithium iron phosphate batteries, and so they can kind of absorb some of that price, that the extra cost. They can absorb some of that, especially when people are wanting the two higher tiers of the vehicle. But the other thing is they want to, they want their customers to have a good customer experience. So basically they feel if they raise the prices, which they're going to have to do, and they acknowledge they're going to have to raise the prices at some point, they want their customers to feel like they're not getting hosed over. It's really important, especially for Fisker at this early stage. Who knows, you know, if they're successful 20 years from now, what they'll be like. But at this early stage, it's really successful that they keep their customers happy, or really important that they keep their customers happy. I'm starting to get a little punch drunk. Let's see. He mentioned that people were asking why he's announcing new vehicles. And he said, well, if we waited to start building, you know, the next vehicle after the first vehicle is finished, then we'd be really far behind. And I have this to say, you can still work on those vehicles, but why are we announcing them so far out? It feels like it's appropriate to announce the Fisker Pear because that vehicle is kind of around the corner. However, the Ronin is a little bit away. So maybe keep your powder dry on that. Be one of the problems that Nikola had is, I mean, one of the many problems that Nikola had, but one of the problems was that they were like announcing partnerships left and right. They're building a car with Chevy, and then they're building garbage trucks, and they're doing this and they're doing that. Well, you kind of got to get that first thing out the door to build some confidence that you could actually build something, because amongst other things, announcing all these partnerships and then having to say, okay, we're not doing these things anymore, and scale back kind of hurt Nikola. Granted, there was other factors involved, but in general, I think that, you know, waiting a little bit until you actually have something to show off is better than saying, hey, look at this new shiny thing over here. Let's get some excitement, have something to show off. It doesn't have to work, just have something to show off. And then let's move into, you know, that next phase. I think they're being a little premature with the announcements is what I'm saying. But it does seem like Fisker is a very well-run company, and they seem like they know what they're doing. And I'm an idiot in my basement. And, you know, Heinrich Fisker is worth a lot of money. So what do I know? Let's see. He talked about the Fisker Pear. We don't know what the Fisker Pear is going to be, and they make mention of this car, this vehicle, all throughout the earnings call, but they don't give a lot of details. Here's what I think the Fisker Pear might be. I think it's going to be a small one or two seat vehicle, maybe three wheels, because it's called the Personal Electric Automotive Revolution. They mentioned it. Heinrich Fisker mentioned it in his opening remarks. This vehicle is going to be very affordable. It's going to be stripped down. I think it's probably going to be a compelling vehicle in terms of range and price. But I don't think you're going to be able to fit a family in it. I could be wrong, but this is my guess. And he mentioned that they're putting the new technology in the Ronin. And then they'll, you know, kind of as that technology matures, they'll bring it down the line to the Ocean and Pear, which is pretty standard for a lot of these companies. All right, next up, we are going to listen to Dr. Burkhard Huhnke. I hope I said that right. I probably didn't. And he's the CTO, and he's just going to give us an update from the CTO. And this won't be as long as Heinrich's.
Beginning with the Fisker Ocean, engineering, testing, and validation is progressing well and is on schedule to achieve SOP in November. We have transitioned from simulated to physical validation and testing, and it has been very encouraging to see the results from our physical tests match those in our simulated tests. Prototype testing is accelerating globally. The winter testing in Sweden, as Henrik explained, was completed in March, where chassis systems such as electronic stability control, suspension, and brake tuning was done. We also tested the powertrain system in extreme cold and low friction environments. The first round of vehicle dynamic testing with early prototype vehicles was performed in February in Italy and with our partner Bridgestone, where the chassis, brake, and ride characteristics of the vehicles and tires were tuned. The chassis team is currently performing another tuning activity to further refine the dynamics and ride characteristics of the vehicle, using both early and our advanced prototype vehicles. Durability testing in high speed, high load conditions of the suspension components with prototype vehicles was completed already in April. So we are continuing to leverage Fisker and Magna's collective expertise and reach to ensure critical components are sourced, delivered, assembled, and tested on schedule. From our vantage point, semiconductor chip availability is improving, and we are partnering with our supply chain to protect our November 17th production plans. We are currently building the next phase of prototype vehicles with production intent, design, and components. We finished the first high-speed side crash, IIHS, side-moving deformable barrier, and obtained great results as expected by virtual analysis as top safety rating range. As Henrik mentioned, I participated in the management drive along with Henrik and Gita a couple of weeks ago in Graz with the prototype vehicle and got to experience firsthand the fully functional software at high speed. We are focused on delivering all the attributes for both the safe and fun driving experience. Examples include torque vectoring for impressive high-speed handling, premium braking system and chassis tuning for exceptional performance, and a fully integrated L2 plus ADAS package. We are executing on the IC software stack, the CAN flash electronics control units, and are progressing well with our over-the-air or OTA implementation. The OTA pipeline is installed, the backend is in place, and we are already collecting data from prototypes rolling off the line.
Okay, I don't have too much more to add there. It sounds like their crash test indicates, you know, a top safety rating, but it still needs to be officially certified. There's nothing official. That's just what they've garnered. And it hits that top safety pick range, which is really good for the company if that's true. I really I cut a lot of stuff out because some of it wasn't relevant and some of it was a little too nerdy, I think. But I like that. I really like how Fisker just gets right down and dirty into this and gives us all these nerdy details. Let's go ahead and listen to Gita, who is the chief financial officer. And I really like this lady. She's very smart and feisty. Let's go ahead and listen.
With almost 6 months to SOP, we remain intensely focused on the supply chain, monitoring weekly with suppliers, drilling down multiple tiers to mitigate any disruptions, address input cost inflation, and protect logistics resilience to ensure timeliness and quantity stay on track. Magna's Tire has affirmed their production timing, and they are now in full execution mode to deploy all the necessary factory tooling we require for start of production and a subsequent ramp up. They have confirmed that beyond the current committed volumes, we can further ramp up production in second half of 2024 into 2025, provided we can scale up suppliers at the same rate. Now, let me give you some additional Ocean program updates. We passed our functional confirmation gateway on March 16, 2022. The program completed 95% of production releases, and suppliers have been kicked off for long lead tooling. Prototype build phase is underway with critical testing started. As Burkhard explained, design progression and releases for launch are all on track. Our body shop tooling installation at Magna's Tire and suppliers is on track to support the body invite or body invite pre-builds. Our body invite build trials at the production facility started in progression for pre-production builds for GA online. In addition, we have a number of supply chain updates to share. All key ocean suppliers have been nominated, onboarded, and embedded into our processes. A dedicated quality team has been deployed for managing critical suppliers for launch readiness and also to ensure on-time production part approval process, also known as PPAP, and capacity confirmation. We have created an executive task force with Magnus Tyer, and this task force is systematically conducting reviews with critical suppliers, including in-person visits to confirm bumper-to-bumper readiness for tooling, part status, capacity, and PPAP achievement. Our relationship with CATL remains very strong, and in addition to CATL, we have already commenced discussions with other suppliers for multi-sourcing batteries for the larger pair program. Our launch team reviews daily any potential supplier part shortages for pre-builds and proactively manages support plans, logistics, expedite routing, and assist tier one and twos with the recovery plans and provides them assistance to maintain their part delivery commitments. Finally, last quarter, we proactively rolled out a chip delivery requirements to tier ones and twos 1 year in advance to provide advanced planning volumes for their subsequent suppliers. A dedicated team at Fisker manages chip supply chain and is responsible for all action plans. Staying on the supply chain topic, material and commodity pricing is a concern for everyone. Coincidentally, our vehicle bodies are primarily made of steel, which has not increased as significantly as aluminum. In addition, our two battery chemistry approach that we decided 2 years ago enables us to better align the higher priced NMC battery with our premium trim levels where margins are less sensitive. Conversely, in our base model sport, we will utilize LFP or lithium iron phosphate batteries, which do not contain nickel or cobalt. In March, we announced crossing 40,000 reservations and elaborated on our ocean pricing strategy. At this stage, we do not intend to raise prices for the Fisker Ocean before the earlier of calendar 2024 or the sale of the first 40,000 ocean units. Based on customer feedback, we expect much of 2023's production to be focused on premium trims, including the Fisker Ocean One Launch Edition and the Ocean Extreme, both of which are slated for 68,999 MSRP in the U.S. With respect to our manufacturing facility and partner, Foxconn received their CFIUS approvals for acquiring Lordstown last month, and whilst they have extended their closing date by a few weeks, they have assured us that the deal closure is on track.
All right. Whew, that was a long one. Now, it may not seem like it was a long one to you, but she actually went on for a very long time. And I'm very surprised. I don't think she said or stumbled. Maybe she stumbled a couple times, but really, she really knocked it out of the park there. I wish I could do that. It sounds like Fisker, based on what Gita said and what Heinrich said later in the earnings call, it sounds like they are going to charge for over-the-air updates. And it's probably not going to be for all over-the-air updates, but I hope it's affordable. Like, I don't think this is a bad plan per se, but like, if you don't want heated seats, for instance, when you buy the car, but you do 2 years after because you happen to drive to Colorado or somewhere where it's cold, and you're like, you know what, I'll pay $200 for heated seats right now. You know, that kind of makes sense. I hope it's not something like you're going to get new maps and we're going to charge you $700 for over-the-air updates, for that over-the-air update. That doesn't seem like it's a good way to make money. But if they do it right, I can see where that would make sense. They're not going to change prices before 2024 or before they've sold 40,000 units, which I talked about that before, but that just adds a little bit more information to that. She did a pair update, but I completely cut that out. I cut out a lot of stuff because it was really long. One of the things that was interesting is I knew that Foxconn was going to build a vehicle for Fisker, and I think it's the Ocean, but I could be wrong. It might be the pair. I did not realize that the Foxconn was going to use the Lordstown plant for that. And Heinrich mentioned that he thought that Foxconn was also going to build a truck for another automaker. So that makes sense. That would be the Lordstown Endurance. But he wasn't sure, and he was kind of cagey about it. And he mentioned this, you know, later in the earnings call, which may or may not, I may or may not add, depending on how we're doing on time. Another thing that Gita mentioned was that Fisker has $1 billion cash on hand, which when you're ramping up to build an electric vehicle, that doesn't seem like very much. They're looking at other ways to fund their working capital at the moment. So just something to kind of keep in the back of your head there. Like $1 billion is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. It just seems like it's not all that much when it comes to time to ramp up production. I think at some point, and I can't remember exactly when it is in the earnings call, they think, Fisker thinks that they'll have about, after everything's all said and done of the initial ramp up, they'll have about $400 million in the bank. But of course, if something goes wrong, that could cost them more money. One of the things that they said protects them is that they have these contracts with Magna, and Magna, if something goes wrong, depending on the situation, Magna has to absorb those costs, not Fisker, which I thought was interesting. Let's go ahead and get to our questions. And let's see, I will serve up our first one right here.
We have the first question from Adam Jones of Morgan Stanley. So please go ahead when you're ready.
Thanks. Question first for Gita. you do sound very comfortable, might be the wrong word, but not particularly worried about the supply chain and raw material environment. Now, granted, you're not in production right now, won't be in any significant volume this year. But if I had to say what areas of either raw materials, supply chain, or specifically battery materials with CATL is maybe on higher alert and getting more of your attention.
Hey, Adam. Great question. Hi. I don't want to give the impression that I'm not worried about supply chain. It's just I went to a great detail to explain today because I want to give a little view, oversight of what we're doing on a daily basis. We're seeing the same problems that everybody else is seeing, but we're just figuring ways on how to solve for the supply chain. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we don't know what we don't know. We do have exposure to Europe, clearly, because we are manufacturing in Europe. So it's hard to predict if some of the events that we see in Europe with respect to a recession or with respect to the war could bring. So far, we are checking in with our suppliers on a regular, consistent basis, and we are making sure that they are securing parts that they need to for our production and ramp up, and areas where we feel that there might be some risks, we are trying to put containment plans in place. But again, I don't want to give the impression we don't have any problems. We do, like everyone else, but we're just collectively mm-hmm. working with Magna to find solutions, whether it's to secure chips, whether it's to stockpile them, whether it's to get into legal agreements. One thing, for example, I can give you, we had some issues with semiconductor chips, believe it or not, on the beautiful 17.1-inch screen that we have in the vehicle. And I know that we had a detailed discussion with Foxconn yesterday where they had factory closures in China, but they have resolved that. And they are clearly working with us as a partner. And we are on our way to deliver screens for our testing phase and finally ramp up to production. So again, we do have problems, but we are just finding better ways to solve them.
I wonder in this situation with the supply chain being what it is, I wonder if it's better to be a smaller automotive company building electric vehicles, you know, between 10 and 40,000, let's say, a year, or if it's better to be like Tesla because, you know, they're building all of these vehicles, making record numbers every year, close to 1 million vehicles. Obviously Tesla can throw its weight around, but if the capacity for the chips, if they can't make all the chips that Tesla needs, is it better to be in Fisker's situation where you're a smaller company? Maybe you're not going to get priority, but you don't need quite as many chips. So does it impact you less? Does it impact you the same? Is it just different? I have no idea. But it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I'd like to know whether or not, I'm sure it's frustrating no matter what, but I'd like to know which situation is better to be in. I would imagine probably building more cars and you know, being in the second situation like Tesla is, because you get more money, but I don't know. Anyway, here's our next question.
We now have the next question from John Murphy of Bank of America.
I wanted to follow up on some commentary in the press release that you plan to honor pricing as it stands for vehicles up to that 40,000 reservation number at the end of the quarter. Does that say more about your commitment to your customers and an effort to establish goodwill? Or is it more that you have a handle on the cost side, going to Gita's comments that you guys are getting creative with some of the solutions there, where the recent price or the cost inflation you see as less of a necessity to pass on to the customer in the near term?
Yeah, you know, I think there's several answers to this question. One, it's clear that that a lot of customers that I think are reserving vehicles, particularly from startups, are looking for, I think, transparency, honesty. We're building a brand. I think the number one thing we have to do is take care of our customers. The good news for us is that a majority of our customers so far have indicated they want to buy one of the two more expensive vehicles. And as you know, we are launching first the special edition Ocean One, which is about $69,000. We are starting to take firm commitments of to that vehicle from July 1st. And that will be limited to 5,000. After that, we continue with Extreme. And because we are because we are selling these very higher end or the highest end vehicle first, we have a much higher profit margin. And then combined with what Gita said in terms of managing the cost extremely well from our purchasing and engineering and finance side, we have a lot of leeway where we felt we can really make sure that we can commit to our first 40,000 customers of not having to change the price. Now, then as we then launch the eventually the base model, as Gita mentioned, we do have the LFP battery, which is not so affected by price increases, but we have set, and we'll make some of those as well without a price increase, but, you know, 40,000 vehicles, 40 to 50,000 vehicles, what we can make next year. We are trying still to see if we can ramp a little bit in the end of the next year, so we might get higher, but we have set over 40,000 vehicles. There will likely be an increase because that will be about a year later. And I think every OEM in the world at least increases the price once a year. In fact, there are some OEMs that are increasing their price, you know, every week or every month. So I think that for us, it was about staying true to our customers and, of course, still managing the finances. And we are able to do that because of this high profitable first vehicle we're sending out.
All right. I've pretty much already talked about this, so I don't have very much more to add on it. I do want to correct something. I did say, because I thought this was the case, I did say that they were using LFP batteries for all three SKUs or all three configurations of the Ocean, and I'm incorrect. That's only on the lower model they're using the LFP batteries. All right, we're going to jump into some retail questions.
The first question is... last earnings call, you mentioned about a potential fleet order. Is there any update you can share?
Yeah. So the last earnings call were before Ukraine war. I just want to mention. So there was obviously a lot of things that's changed since. And one of the things that changed was we saw an incredible increased activity in Googling the Fisker Ocean. And I think has a lot to do with the racing gasoline prices. We saw a huge increase in our reservations. So I actually went ahead and canceled an MOU we had with a large rental car maker for a potential sale of quite a lot of vehicles. And I did it because I realized that with this increase in reservations, we are not interested just to do a sale to a rental car entity, because in the end of the day, we can make a lot more money, specifically with our flexible lease, even with our normal sales of vehicles, because we also have a mobility model where we are selling over-the-air updates. So what we are doing is we're still pursuing talks for a potential sale, but it has to include a much more innovative business model where we can generate revenue during the active use of these rental vehicles, meaning we need to make sure we can make some revenue on these vehicles while they're in possession of the rental car company, and we are willing to share some of that revenue. So to build that business model takes a little longer time, and we wanted a little more freedom to do that. We were not in a hurry just to announce any random deal. I think historically, selling to rental car companies have not been great profitable deals for any car maker. So if we do it, I had a very clear mandate from our CFO. It has to be more profitable than just even if we sell our own vehicles. So we need a new business model for this. And I think we can see some interest in that because we would also offer some revenue to the rental car makers. So it's something we'll continue to work on, but not something we'll do for any cost.
I just want to add to that that what we've seen and I experienced, the rental car companies are still in the overhang of previous deals where they're expecting 12 to 24 month deals, buybacks, and I think EVs require less service. They are more sturdy. So for some of the rental car companies, they have to come to terms with the fact that EVs behave fundamentally differently. Cars of the future are connected. So from our perspective, we still have a limited production at Magna, and we would like to clearly do some of the smaller fleet deals that we've already done. But a deal that's in thousands or a big order, 30, 40, 50,000, would require a very unique business model.
One of the things that Heinrich mentions was he wanted to sell upgrades through over-the-air updates to like rental car customers. So it wouldn't come specifically, like if you wanted those heated seats, that wouldn't come specifically from Hertz or Budget. That would, you'd have to order that through Fisker, which I think is kind of a cool idea. And, you know, it makes sense that right now, because they're in such an early stage that they don't have the infrastructure for that setup. I do think it's it would be interesting to see how the revenue split between Fisker and the rental car company went, though, because, you know, the rental car company wants all the money. They don't want you to have all the money. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I can't wait to see how it plays out. All right, let's go ahead and jump into our next question.
And the next question from the retail shareholders, what can you say regarding all the speculation of a Fisker and Apple partnership?
Well, you know, I think people are reading too much into this one. As I mentioned before, the inspiration for naming our second vehicle Pear was a bit of a joke, kind of playing on our partnership with Foxconn. We do call it Personal Electric Automotive Revolution, and it kind of fitted really well with that name. But I would say the Pear will be such a unique and disruptive vehicle that we believe, and I believe it can be the automotive industry, to the automotive industry, what the Apple iPhone was to the cell phone industry, really revolutionary. And, you know, I think, I don't know if you can say you can't compare apples to pears, but I definitely think the Pear is going to be such a unique, amazing vehicle. But there is absolutely no deal or talks with Apple, the company, at this point in time.
I think, let's see, Lucid has been asked this, Fisker has been asked this. I don't think Rivian's been asked this, but I haven't listened to all of their earnings calls. But everybody wants to know what Apple's doing, and they know that Apple's not going to talk, so they just kind of pick at all the other companies to see if maybe they can get a scoop. The next question is about Foxconn's finalization of the Lordstown plant, and we'll get a little bit more detail on what I was talking about earlier when it came to Foxconn and building a vehicle for Fisker.
Do you have any color on Foxconn's finalization of the Lordstown plant? I mean, there have been some recent announcement, you know, to my understanding, you know, the ink might not be dry just yet on that asset transfer. So wondering if you could share anything, you know, on that point. And then you confirmed, you know, the 2,500 pair reservations. You mentioned the 1 million unit potential in, you know, in just 5 years, right, 2027. Can you remind us, you know, what the max capacity potential is at Lordstown? Does Foxconn have any other OEMs they'll be working with at that plant, to your knowledge?
Well, first, I can't speak on behalf of of Foxconn. They're a public company. But all I can say is there's been no change in our conversations or planning with Foxconn on producing the pair in Ohio. The plant, I believe, can go up to 400 or maybe even 500,000 vehicles a year. To my knowledge, I don't know any other than I think there's a truck that they're thinking to do there. But what I understand is we have clear priority. We'll take definitely a vast majority of the volume in that plant. Obviously, the 1 million vehicles are not all going to be produced in the U.S. As I've said earlier, we're contemplating production of the pair in China, in Europe, and potentially a decontented, even lower cost version in India eventually. So I think that we have enough time to sort out the volume onto 2027. Also remember, we're not actively promoting the pair in any shape or form, quite frankly. We simply opened the reservation on request of I think some enthusiasts that want to make sure they got first in line. And we did also because, as I mentioned, we are talking to a few fleets about purchase. You know, we're convinced about our sales targets, but at this point, yeah, there's been no change with the conversation with Foxconn.
Yeah, just from a public update, I think about 5 or 6 days ago, Foxconn had announced that they had received their regulatory clearance on CFIUS, which is sort of the foreign investment in the United States, given it's a factory. And I think that obviously is a regulatory aspect that they needed to get through, which is a big hurdle. So that was publicly announced.
All right. I already talked about this, so I don't really have much more to say on it. We have one last question here. Let's go ahead and jump to it and wrap up the show.
We now have our next question from Joseph Spak of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead when you're ready, Joseph.
Thanks so much for squeezing me in here. I just want to go back to the dual chemistry strategy. And especially in the context of how you're talking about launching these vehicles, I understand you're going to launch the first edition first. And then you're talking about really a very high mix of the upper trim levels. But if you're using LFP for the lower trim levels, doesn't that from a margin perspective really start to tip the scales? I mean, we just saw Tesla print 20% operating margins largely on the back of, you know, really upping the LFP mix. So I'm curious about your thoughts there in terms of, I know traditionally you start high end and then you move down, but given what's going on with the metal prices, like why wouldn't you consider a change in the mix launch?
Because when you have one vehicle at 37,500 and the other 69,000, you clearly have a way, way higher margin on the 69,000 model. So there's a much more headroom, and we are not affected like some full aluminum vehicles, like some of those you just mentioned. They obviously have a big impact right now because of the rising aluminum prices. Our entire body is out of steel and some composite materials. In fact, something that I think nobody knows at this point, and nobody has even noted, we have designed the Ocean originally to have a very, very low insurance cost. And what we did was we actually made both the front fender and very uniquely, maybe one of the few cars in the world, a vehicle that actually have the rear fender in plastic bumper material like you have on the front and rear bumper, which means that you can actually bump the rear fender without even having to replace it if it's not too high speed. And if you do have to replace it, you just bolt it off and put another fender on, whereas normally the entire body side stamping is part of the rear fender and it can cost incredible amount of money to repair it. Now, that now also comes back to the fact that because it's plastic, we don't have these issues with extra cost. So, no, I think it has to bring a brilliant tactic because once we need to go up in volume next year, LFP will still be a cheaper battery. Whether we have increasing raw materials cost or not, that's why we chose in the first place. Look, I'm going to be honest. I didn't forecast the Ukraine war back in early 2021 when we chose LFP. We chose it because it's generally cheaper. And we also chose it because we think that the Ocean in the future could be the second vehicle that you buy and maybe mainly used in the city. And for that, you want super fast charging. And LFP actually offers faster charging, even though it has less range, but offer faster charging than NMC and other battery technologies. So I think we got a real jewel here. And I think because it looks like at this point, we could be one of the first companies to offer this in the U.S. And I think it's a real competitive advantage. And we can always decide to raise the volumes. And that's obviously what we're doing right now with Magna.
But just one point I wanted to add is that the reason why not just the customers want the fully optioned out trim, the reason to also start with that is because it has all the features. So you want all the suppliers to scale up with every single tool, and you want to make sure that we are able to showcase every single feature in that vehicle to the customers. So for us, it's really critical. It's all-wheel drive. It's silicon carbide. It's NMC long-range battery. It's got the California mode. It has solar roof. It has a rotating screen. So you really want to showcase the best attributes against benchmark first.
So it sounds like the main body of the car will be steel and the fenders will be plastic, which I mean, that sounds good. Hopefully that works out. I don't know how the look and feel seems like it would be different, but maybe it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. I'm not saying it's not a good idea, because it probably is from a repairability standpoint, but hopefully it looks good. Hopefully it feels even when you're walking around the car and you touch it. I used to have a Saturn, and it was really fun to kick the door. And then it never didn't injure it, didn't damage the car. So that's, I guess, neat. He was mentioning LFP batteries, and when Fisker starts delivering, he thinks that they'll have one of the first vehicles with LFP batteries out and about. And I could be totally wrong with this, but I know that Tesla has LFP batteries. Doesn't Hyundai and Kia, aren't they using LFP batteries? I could be wrong. I don't know. In the Ioniq 5 and the EV6, that's something I have to look up. I'm not going to do it right now because it's almost midnight on a Friday night and I'm kind of tired. But it is interesting, something to think about. Anyway, all right, everybody, that is it for me. As you can tell, I'm turning into a gigantic buffoon. I hope you all had a wonderful week. If you want to email me, it's Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/kilowatt or supportkilowatt.com. And then what's the other thing you can do? Man, go listen to True North EVs. James is a really nice guy. I think you're going to like his podcast. And you can find me on Twitter, 918. Okay, I'm going to end it here because I'm blabbering. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.